You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans Women's World Cup Daily. Alexis is still on vacation, but I am very much here. What's good? I am Christian Polanco, and I am joined by a very special guest, a dear, dear friend, the homie. It's a shame. It is a crime that it's been just way too long since you've been on the show, because you become I'm not gonna say you necessarily become you are a superstar. I'm gonna just say that. But at this point we're at the superstardom, we're just like, should we text Meg? I don't even know if she's gonna answer, but she does, and she did, and that's why she's on the show today. Shout out to Meg Linehan, everybody. Meg, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on the weirdest sleep schedule on the face of the planet. I went to bed at like 6 o'clock last night, and then yeah, it's just, you know, World Cup life. Even coming back to the States is still
silly. You were obviously in New Zealand and Australia, mm-hmm. Covering the World Cup for The Athletic, and even like when I was like hitting you up, I'm just like, I don't even know what. Is it 2023 in Australia? I don't even know if I should.
It is the worst time zone on the face of the planet. Like, just trying to, and I found a website that would actually just show me the time zones, but also allow you to be like, if it's 4 p.m. here in New Zealand, what time is it back? Because trying to schedule things was just A, impossible. Be like, people are like, well, can you do 7 o'clock in the morning? And it's like, I can, I don't want to.
I will hate, like, you, but I guess I physically could.
I physically can do that. And plus you'd wake up every morning and it was just like, you'd just be a wall of email, Slack, like because everybody's had a full day. And then you wake up and it's like, theoretically, I'm the one in the future. Why is all of this happening? Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what was that Fergie line? You're living in 2000 and late, you know? Why are you doing
that? Yeah, no,
why
I
are
just
you bothering
like,
me?
It got slightly better, but yeah, it was just, I don't think any of us were truly prepared for a World Cup. First of all, in that time zone, but B, in winter, because I kept getting texts from people being like, is everybody really wearing coats? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like it was winter. I mean, I don't know how cold it was, but...
Some days it was very pleasant, and it was just like, oh, I get to wear all my fall layers, and it's not fall yet, and it's deeply enjoyable. But then sometimes you'd be in Wellington, and it's 8 p.m. at night, and the wind is like whipping through the media tribune. And I was wearing two pairs of pants.
Yeah. Meg, let's get right into it, because obviously we watched the game this morning, England against Australia. And we, you know, this. I feel like the majority of the world were all Matildas. And
England, very up the Tillys energy. Yeah.
And England and, you know, Coach Serena Wiegmann broke a lot of hearts. It was obviously the host nation, Australia, playing. And they what a tournament. But they just fell short to, you know, what obviously was the better team. But this is, your initial reaction, and because, you know, I'll get to mine as well, but it just disappointing. I don't know. It was just like disappointing mistakes from Australia that really just cost them.
Well, you're going from the high of Sam Kerr scoring that goal, right, of this, like, transcendent moment for Sam Kerr, who's been hurt, who's been injured, who hasn't been able to play, who has truly the weight of an entire nation on her shoulders, scoring that goal. And then only moments later, her defense just like completely collapsing, right? And that face of her just kind of being like, I did all this for you, and this is what, okay, all right, right. And so I think it is so frustrating because just having been in Australia and having been in a lot of these fan spaces, but also just this was a World Cup where being in the host nation, it was not a women's World Cup. It was a World Cup, period. Right. Like, it felt so different. And you would get into a cab and people would be like, are you going to the, what are you doing? Like, what are, and they wanted to talk to you about games, about players, about where's that? Like, it's so specific. And so to see that energy coming out of Australia, out of the host nation, feeling like this is going to be potentially their 99 moment, mm-hmm. right? And it's going to completely revolutionize the game. To then get that Sam Kerr goal and then immediately have it fall apart is just, it's heartbreaking. It's just, it's completely heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of the best way to kind of encapsulate it. I mean, just the, I don't know who was the defender. It was the fullback that just didn't make.
Ellie Carpenter. Yeah. She just like could not make contact with the ball.
Or it was like a little bit, couldn't make contact, couldn't make a decision. Like it's one of those.
I think maybe a miscommunication of like, oh, you're coming, like,
or even like,
Andy Arnold, you're coming to get it.
Or like, I don't want to give up a corner because, you know,
or
set pieces,
penalty, right?
You know, or penalty, right? And it's like, I don't want to, you know, we know how dangerous set pieces are and how they've been at this World Cup. And just so unfortunate to go from that high of the Sam Kerr goal to that. Because we were so desperately waiting for that Sam Kerr moment, and it happened at just in such a perfect time, and the momentum was definitely with Australia. They really, really played well. I thought they would win this game. They looked pretty good throughout this tournament. I don't know if they surprised you as much as they did me. I did not think they would play so well. And you know, I've been talking up her name so often, but Mary Fowler.
Yeah, Mary Fowler had a great tournament.
What a great
tournament. For me, I think the number one warning sign this morning was when we found out Alana Kennedy was not going to play in this game. And as much as Sam Kerr coming back into that lineup helps, I mean, you need someone to score goals, right? And like Sam Kerr can obviously score. I mean, that was just it was a perfect, perfect goal. But you also need players who are consistently in this defense to perform, and then to miss out on Alana Kennedy, who is ill. That was the one where I was like, uh-oh, like
and she's been great too.
Not a great sign. Not a great sign. And that she's just been with that team forever. Like, that is a player that I think you trust to be the cool head in the right moments. And yeah, I think it had an impact on the game, but
yeah, just I mean, it's like it's weird for us two Americans to be so somber about this Australian team.
And it truly, like... My wife came into the room and was just like, I'm really sorry about England. And I was like, me too.
You're just like, oh, nar, honey.
I know.
I was like, what? Okay, yeah.
Really? Yeah, and they're just like, I don't know. It is really funny because I feel like after the U.S. got knocked out, it was, I think everybody kind of shifted to Japan and then had come around on Sweden and then had like fully moved into Australia bandwagon. And so it's just kind of been like one cut punch after the other. And we're all just like, cool, I guess.
And
this is the final we have now.
Right. Yeah. I'm you know, England and Spain, people are calling it the OG colonizer derby or the colonizer classico, which is all right. I mean, it's a, I want to talk about the final in a second, but let's give the praise to England. They did get the job done.
England has been, I mean, you have to give credit to England because first of all, you think about all the players that they're missing, right? Like, this was a story that came into the tournament with such massive storylines about Beth Mead and then Leah Williamson, like all of these players that are missing. And then you have Lauren James go out on a red card and extra game suspension. Serena Wiegman obviously is, I think, the leading coach in women's international football at this point in time. And there's, I don't think, a dispute about it. But England deserves credit for getting this moment. Like, they have shown tournament football is survival, right? More than anything. And England have shown that they can survive. They can score big moments. They have players who can step up. I mean, that no-look pass from Lauren Hemp today was absurd.
Yeah.
Millie Bright's pass over the top too. Like it's the passing for me that really has stood out for England. Like they're able to find players and kind of break open teams in clutch moments. So
yeah, they also
do get the credit.
I mean, impressive, obviously, to you know, handle obviously the game against Nigeria and losing Lauren James and still winning that game in penalties, but then also the game against Colombia where they it was like a home game for Colombia.
Yeah, I mean, England has had to play like two tough back to back sort of like mental opponents of the crowd being completely against them.
Right. You know, I mean, where'd this come from? Why do people hate the English so much?
It's really, I will say, if you mute the phrase "it's coming home" on Twitter, it makes the experience a lot easier to stop.
Good. That's good to know. That's good.
Went this morning to go meet, and then it was already muted. And I was oh, all right. I thought of it already. Good. Great.
In this game against Australia, I think that's where you have to give them a lot of credit because the mental kind of strength to have that game against Colombia and where, you know, clearly we know who the sort of underdog is, but the fans are really, really behind them. And with the Matildas, it was just clearly there. And that's why that giving up that second goal was really, really the heartbreak, because that if they didn't do that, I could essentially see Australia winning the game because they were kind of on the front foot. But so many players just really, really stepping up. And this is, I mean, you know, as far as any kind of prediction for the final, I mean, it's you. I guess you just have to favor England. I mean, Spain are really good, but and we know they're going to possess the ball. But England have so many different kind of playmakers that can really make it difficult. Do you think Lauren James? You don't think does she start? Does she start in the final?
I don't know. Well, especially because I think we've seen back to back starting 11s be the same for England. So it kind of feels like you want to keep that momentum. And we've seen that from Serena Wiegmann over the years of like, she has kind of her approach, right? Uh-huh. And it changed slightly this tournament, but I can see them just being like, listen, we know this 3-5-2 is working and we're just going to go. And then also like, it's not it would be bad for Lauren James, but it's a very good thing for England to be like, oh, here's Lauren James, right? Yeah. Like, that's still kind of an ideal setup of, we know that we have the starting 11 that has worked the past couple of games that has gotten results. And now we get Lauren James back.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great scenario. It worked out for her because she obviously was missing a lot of games and would only be available for the final. And now England are in the final. So that obviously a lot to be excited about. I'm excited about the World Cup final. I also happen to be pretty excited about the League's Cup final that is happening on Saturday. What a transition, because I don't know if you know this, Meg Linehan, but Coors Light is the official sponsor of the Leagues Cup 2023, and we've been watching. You know, Messi has been appointment television, and it's you know, a lot of people didn't think the Leagues Cup would even be that like entertaining, and it has been wildly entertaining, and we all enjoy it with an ice cold Coors Light, you know. And Meg, I don't know if you know this about Coors Light, but I'm happy to, this is my pitch to you because you know that a Coors Light is cold enough and perfect enough to drink because the mountains turn blue right on the bottle.
They do.
Okay, look at this. See, the marketing works. They are everybody's thankful and grateful that I continue to put out this this message and make people aware of how great Coors Light can be, especially during Leagues Cup, okay? So this summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with the nice cold Coors Light, official beer of Leagues Cup 2023. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Meg, how'd I do?
You did great. They do turn blue.
Okay, good. Look at that. Look, see, it's always every guest that joins me and I do this ad, it's always like a nice little surprise, nice little break. You know, it's an ad you don't want to skip, and also you're also forced to listen to it, which is also a part of it. Meg, you are truly an incredible journalist, and you know, I've been lucky to know you for a long time, and I've seen not only your growth in your own craft, in popularity, but also you've just done some incredible and important work that I've really admired. You know, and I don't say that lightly. Obviously, the article, you know, the NWSL kind of scandal and everything that happened there. But then you also recently wrote an article about the U.S. women's national team getting knocked out of the World Cup. And I recommend everybody, you know, to check it out on The Athletic. But this is I kind of want to have this, especially now that you've had a little bit of time, now that you're back home, just looking back a little bit, because the experience, you know, I was talking to Jessica Smetana yesterday. She was on the show. And I basically made the example that, you know, we cover women's soccer on this show from time to time. We are stand-up comedians that talk about this sport. I don't think the bar is incredibly high for us as maybe some journalists, but people tend to appreciate the fact that, you know, we show some love to the women's game. And but we've never done 30 straight days of covering women's soccer, and it's been an interesting aspect of sort of our lives and our careers, where people are really upset that we seem to be talking about women's soccer for 30 days straight, where it has brought in
how dare you, you're a gender traitor, actually, like, that's what it is. Traitor. And
so people, you know, the manosphere is upset with us, but I basically said, like, when you cover women's soccer for 30 days straight, you essentially feel like a woman on the internet, right? Who deals with a lot of criticism and judgment over anything that you really do. But this has been a unique time. So, you know, we're not used to seeing the U.S. women's national team lose, and it's been it's brought out the crazies, the weirdos, the people who probably definitely don't even watch games. They don't watch soccer, but they have a lot of opinions on women's soccer. So when you were writing an article and just kind of sifting through all this stuff, I'm sure it feels kind of gross, but what was it?
What was kind of nice about being over there, and so I wrote that column literally my last night in Australia. Like, I was getting on a plane the next morning out of Sydney to go back home. And, you know, that last day I had flown from Melbourne to Sydney just to basically put myself in proximity to the airport. And I was like, I'm going to book myself a nice little beach hotel and do this nice, beautiful coastal walk. And I had, I think, my first beer, honestly, in like probably 2 weeks, because I got sick over there. So, like,
obviously Coors Light, so we all know that.
Coors Light, very popular in Australia, famously. But, you know, I tried to, like, put myself in, like, this good, calm mental space before I got myself kind of very revved up again. Because one of the other things, too, was we were kind of watching throughout the tournament that there was this brewing rehash of some of the 2019 stuff, right? Like, suddenly there was this new discussion about, well, they're not singing for the anthem. And we were we were all kind of talking to each other across, like, the media group of, like, are you touching it? I don't want to touch it. Like, it's not people who care about the team. It's a bad faith attack. Like, if we give it oxygen, it takes off. Like, we don't want it to kind of pierce the bubble that we're in. So basically, we kind of, like, put something together in case the issue got forced. And so I took a lot of what I had kind of put into place there and just started expanding it in terms of, you know, this was, it was a moment that just a lot of people have been waiting for 4 years, right? And Megan Rapinoe is obviously just like a lightning rod of a person, but I think there is some comfort in the fact that it shows that they have cultural power in the U.S., that they are a threat to a certain segment of the population, because first of all, like, and it really is as simple that they are women, but they are successful women, that they had this moment of failure, right? Which happens in sports. But suddenly it becoming about, well, they didn't sing for the anthem, they're deeply unpatriotic, you have Donald Trump popping up, and, like, so much of it, too, is also, it's a distraction from the fact that he's being indicted left and right, right? Like, it's Nikki Haley trying to like glom onto something when she doesn't have good approval numbers right at the moment. She's trying to run for president. Like, so much of it is just, I think I use the word craven, right? Like, it's manufactured and it's just to score a point. And I think sometimes we forget that these are actual human beings on the other side of it. And that, you know, I just think about like what's happened with Brittany Griner, right? In the WNBA, and that she, like, her physical safety is currently in question. And so, and I've seen this for Megan Rapinoe, right? Like, Megan Rapinoe has to have like extra security at games. And this is already the case. And now I think I'm honestly even more worried about it now, right? Because I think they do sense this kind of weakness or vulnerability. And so the column was not necessarily fun to write, but I think, you know, I give full credit to my editor, Alex Abnos at The Athletic, because I kept joking, like, the Key and Peele skit, like, he was my anger translator, where I was just, like, truly, like, throwing fire. And I was like, I don't think I'm allowed to be this spicy. So you have to, like, bring it back into a level where it is going to, like, actually be published. But yeah, it was, I think it just kind of, you don't want to give it weight. You don't want to give those comments weight. But also at some point, I think you have to have a reality check. That's
yeah,
all
it was. It's an interesting thing of, like, you know, the not singing for the anthem, right? Which is like, I mean, did you watch, like, if the people watch, if they actually did watch, plenty of countries didn't sing the, people didn't sing the anthem, or some
yeah,
anthem didn't.
Some players do. Yeah. It's yeah, and yeah. Also, like, I have always found this fascinating too, because, and to be fair, I'm not an elite athlete in any way and never could be, because my brain is not wired that way. But like, if I'm about to play in a World Cup game, honestly, my last thought is probably about singing that national anthem.
I'm trying to nail this anthem. I just gotta warm up my vocals before the game.
right. So it's just, it's kind of, it's also like just not required. It's not required.
Right. Yeah.
It's made up.
Yeah. And that's sort of the thing of it being manufactured. There's always like a moving of goalposts. Yeah. Like every, it's like, I mean, I hope we all like collectively understand that normal people don't get upset about this stuff. Like, reasonable people don't care. Like, I mean, whether you're very patriotic or not, wherever you lie on any political spectrum, like, it's deeply unimportant whether people sing anthems or not. And you know, when it,
to be
when
fair, it, also our anthem is terrible. Like, it's terrible.
It doesn't so, even like, slap like that. Why?
No, it's not France. It's not like there's better ones.
I'll be honest. I don't even have the national anthem on my Spotify playlist. And if I'm un-American because of that, I mean, then it is what it is. But it is a. It just seems like every single time there's just a new thing. And I don't know. Like, maybe as you people get older and have been through these cycles, I don't know if you do you remember. In this, when Al Gore, I guess we're, you know, aging ourselves, dating ourselves.
I am old enough for this.
Okay,
yeah.
When Al Gore was in the debates, and remember when he said the lockbox? Remember, you got to put it in a lockbox.
Lockbox.
And then everybody was like, "Who is this dork talking about?
Yeah.
You got to put things in the lockbox." And he was like referring to like some financial policy or something. It was just really, really like silly, like big dad energy or whatever. And this guy got hammered in the press. Same thing with like Howard Dean.
The scream, right?
And this was like, we can't even have a dork like this ever be near, you know, the presidential office. And now it is always that those were the things that people used to kind of debate about what politics kind of should be, this kind of silly stuff. And now it is Idiocracy or whatever, that movie.
It's
absurd. So that's why, and all this stuff spills into soccer. This is why it's so wild that the U.S. women's national team are now used as a conservative tool and talking point to rile up.
Yeah, it's a culture war. Like, they're a wedge in the culture. And what I found really interesting too, because I think the thing I was most worried about before the World Cup is the team has been pretty clear and pretty outspoken about supporting trans people in sports. And so that's what I expected it to be about. not if they're singing for the anthem, but also I think polling has shown that the sports thing is kind of played out, right? And so, but the whole thing is just so hypocritical. And that was really what I wanted to kind of get across, is that this is the very same group that has been yelling that we have to protect women's sports now for a couple of years. Right. And then you have the absolute pinnacle of excellence, and you're attacking them.
Yeah. So it's almost like it's never been about women's sports.
Yeah.
Right? It's really
so strange how that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's about attacking women and attacking particular women that will get people on board. I mean, it's a bigger sort of political issue, but it's in certain people's philosophy and political philosophy, it's okay to hate certain women because those are not the right women that we want representing what America is and stuff like that. And it's just a never ending. There'll always be something, right?
I don't think it's ever going to go away at this point. And what it has also, I think, been interesting is that just this team is not political in the same way that the team in 2019 is. Like, obviously Megan Rapinoe is on it, but when you think it's younger and blacker than it's ever been. And so I think outsiders who, again, don't watch the sport, don't watch this team, assign political motivations to some of these younger players who have not spoken out in the same way.
Yeah.
Some of the older white players have.
And that's
just kind of this assumption of like, Trinity Rodman isn't singing the anthem, so Trinity Rodman is anti-American. And it's just like, please just let her chew her gum and play soccer.
She's literally a child. Like, leave her alone. Yeah, there's a lot of and that's a great point. I mean, this World Cup felt, you know, not in any sort of judgmental way, it felt the least divisive, least political leading up to it. It was just like a lot of positivity, a lot of marketing, great commercials. The jerseys have been great and all this other stuff. And then it's everyone else sort of bringing up all this kind of unnecessary stuff that really wasn't there. It's a shame that you know, I'm not going to necessarily say that the U.S. Women's National Team was affected by it in any way, because I really, you know, in my opinion, it's, you know, making no subs and the tactical decisions really
I don't think it affected necessarily. I think that there is a human cost though, just to having, I mean, like, I don't know. I mostly was just hoping everybody deleted Twitter. They're all, I think, on vacation right now. Like, good for, like, please just get away from it and reset and, you know, come back and just, you have to take care of yourself in these moments. And I mean, I think about, you know, what Kelly O'Hara posted about missing that penalty and how she is, it's very clear that she's beating herself up about missing that penalty. And like, it's just, it's a tough thing to handle. Like, that is to have your moment of failure be so public. And obviously, like, with so much mess around it, to like, I don't know. I think it's actually hard for most of us to probably fathom what the actual mental impact of something like that is like.
Yeah, I mean, I'll end with this. I think after watching the U.S. Lose, and you know, it's been a long time since we've seen them lose, at the very least, I think I'm prouder than the team than I've ever sort of been. I mean, it's a really to go through what they go through. I mean, it's just like, even our comment sections are calling them awful, awful things and all this other stuff. It's just like, it's disgusting, and it's hypocritical. It's you know, we don't see the same type of criticism for the U.S. men. I mean, they get criticism too, but it's just a little you know, it's definitely a lot more sprinkling of misogyny and you know they use the team to spread their own hatred of women. Like, that's the thing that's really, really gross to see. But I think the players themselves and the future of the program, I think, is, you know, get the right coach, and I think they're fine. But I'm a fan of the message that they, I'm a fan of what they mean to the country. So even though they lose, it's a bummer. But
it's also sports. Like, teams lose. It's just like, there was no way that they were going to win forever. There just wasn't. And exactly. I think we've seen that in this World Cup too, right? Like, final aside, Germany went out in the group stage, right? Brazil went out in the, like, big teams went out early. This has been a tournament that has reminded us that rankings don't really mean anything, and that so many programs are on the verge of being truly, truly great. And with far fewer resources, yeah, and with a lot worse stuff happening, right? Like, we're ahead of the curve there. But 2027, this is going to be a very different World Cup than what we've ever seen.
This did feel quite transformative. I think a huge boost, I think, for women's soccer in the world to see all the new countries do well. And the U.S. losing, now we're gonna have a new World Cup champion that has never won before. So that'll be exciting, obviously. So that's gonna be on Sunday, Spain against England. We don't have too much time, but I do want to just get your thoughts on the Spanish national team, because we all know that the very public fight that they've been having. Everybody hates the coach. I mean, that's really what we've been kind of getting. If they win, what does this mean for the Spanish Federation? Because it's obviously exciting for the players, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's just really worried that it makes their federation feel very emboldened of like, no, this is the right guy to take us through this moment, and he won't go anywhere. And so there's a couple different ways that I can play, because yes, the federation might be emboldened, but also maybe the players feel emboldened and say, this man had nothing to do with it, right? Yeah. Like, the challenge is that they took a stand and that it was not entirely successful. And they kind of used their biggest ploy of a quasi strike, and then players came back.
Yeah.
So now, like, that move is kind of gone. So it is going to be really, if they win, somehow it does turn into an uphill battle to actually try to make the changes, because it does. Yeah. It did feel like we just put pause in this as an issue. And there are these bigger systemic things happening. It's bigger than the coach, right? Like, yes, the coach is clearly a symptom of the overall problem. But if they win, it just feels like, no, we got it right. I don't know what you're talking about.
Stuff in my mind, I mean, like, if they do win, obviously the victory tour is like the thing that is the next thing that happens. And maybe that is where the players say, like, all right, we won, but we're not playing any games until maybe there's some changes.
So what could be interesting is, I think about, you go back to 99, the U.S. win the World Cup, and then players do immediately go on strike over bonuses in the Olympics ahead of 2000. And those were big players too. And it was mostly successful.
Yeah.
So there is a precedent of, you win a World Cup and then you immediately kind of have some sort of labor action.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives you power. And to be fair, the U.S. Federation at that point was also very much in the, like, I mean, you should, if people haven't read those quotes from that kind of labor action, where, I mean, the Secretary General of U.S. Soccer was basically like, they should shut up and be grateful that they got to play in a World Cup final and they'll get to play in the, like, it's the same kind of stuff that we still see. So it is, and I think it just is going to be, people have to keep external pressure on, because it's the public battle that tends to move the needle more than anything within, like, the actual halls of a federation.
Okay. All right. I mean, it's a lot of storylines throughout this whole World Cup, and it's been fascinating. Meg, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for all the coverage. I know it's a lot of people may not be aware, but it is an incredible amount of work and coverage and going to different cities and traveling and stuff like that. So we're definitely very, very grateful for your time. Everybody, make sure you go follow It's Meg Linehan on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it.
We're not going to call it X. We're never going to call it X.
But Meg is just absolutely one of the best. Go subscribe to The Athletic to read her work. Literally one of the best, people who cover women's soccer. I mean, the go-to source, my go-to source, without a doubt.
I appreciate that.
Meg, thank you again. Everybody, make sure you subscribe to our podcast if you haven't yet. The Cooligans on all socials, at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and shout out to everybody watching on DraftKings Network as well. And that's it. We have so Women's World Cup Daily. I believe there's just a couple left. So I mean, the finals on Sunday. We have one more episode before the final. My producer just told me in my ear. as always, thank you so much to everybody who's been tuning into all these episodes. We really, really appreciate it. If you haven't, listen back to the old episodes if you missed any. This is a comedy show. We've talked about the sport or whatever, the team or the result. It doesn't really matter. You'll still have a good time. So make sure you tune in and leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you have not yet. All right, Meg. You are the absolute best, an absolute legend in the game. I appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Keep enjoying the Women's World Cup. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.